no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com.
And its 98,000 dealers bring you Mr. John Hodiak in tonight's presentation of
Suspense. Tonight, Autolite recreates an historical puzzle as we attempt to locate a sunken treasure. The story, based on fact, is called Gold of the Adomar. Our star, Mr. John Hodiak.
Why, Sheriff, you look like a dude on Saturday night.
Well, I'm going for a ride in my new car. There she is over there.
Well, an Autolite-equipped car, I see, with a complete Autolite electrical system, including the coil, distributor, voltage regulator, starting motor, generator, spark plugs, and battery.
You mean Autolite makes whole electrical systems, Harlow?
They sure do, Sheriff, and every unit and every component part of the Autolite electrical system is related by Autolite engineering design and manufacturing skill to give you the smoothest performance money can buy. That's why Autolite electrical systems are installed as original equipment on many leading makes of our finest cars, trucks, tractors, and boats.
Well, I sure am lucky.
Right you are, Sheriff. So, friends, be sure to insist on Autolite original service parts for the electrical system of your Autolite-equipped car, truck, tractor, or boat. You'll find it pays because, from bumper to tail light, you're always right with Autolite.
And now, Autolite presents Mr. John Hodiak in Gold of the Adomar, a story based on fact, hoping once again to keep you in suspense.
You don't hear the splash when you're lowered over the side on the diving stage. Draped in 200 pounds of lead, copper, and rubberized canvas, the main concern at the moment is the precarious balance between the inlet and exhaust air valves. Then you step off the diving stage, hang by your lifelines, and begin the long, slow drop to the frigid blackness of the bottom of the sea. As many times as I've done this, I've never felt free from the paralyzing fear of the deep. The ocean seems to take on a malignant personality. But this time the stakes are high. I'm dropping down to a barnacled hulk that has in its strong room $3 million in gold. And as the light from the surface slowly fades, I relax and think. Think about the beginning of my lust for gold.
Place won't be the same without you, Nick.
Thanks.
Still trying to figure out why, after 14 years, you suddenly decide to leave the Navy.
Tired of living underwater.
But what
are you... I've had a couple of offers from civilian salvage outfits.
Doing what?
Supervising, boys, supervising. Up top, where the sun shines.
But you don't have to dive anymore if you don't want to. Be an instructor.
Fred.
What?
Fred, it's a monetary world. And if I have to live in it, I'm going to get some of it.
So?
So this. If I can get a civilian berth, it'll give me three times as much in the next 5 years as I can get here, then I'm going to do it.
You'll be eligible for pension in 6 years.
Couldn't care less.
That's it?
Yep. That's it.
Where'll you be staying?
New York for now.
Write me as soon as you have an address.
I will.
Don't get too much of a suntan.
Right now, I'd gladly take a blistering burn.
Sunburn. Someday I'll get one. Maybe after all this is over, I'll have enough of the monetary world to bask in the sun for the rest of my life. Right now, though, I'm cold. I have to swallow over and over again to clear my ears. This wasn't what I had in mind when I left the service. That is, I didn't have it in mind until Carl Foster talked to me.
I went to the Navy Yard hoping to talk you into getting a leave of absence. But now that you've left the service...
How'd you find me here in New York?
I spoke to Fred James, your ex-roommate.
Oh. Why me? The country's full of competent divers.
Perhaps. But I want one who's more than just competent.
What's the job?
Then you'll take it?
Depends.
On what?
Equipment. Most of all, money.
I've got the equipment.
And the money?
How about one-fifth of $3 million?
Let me tell you something, Mr. Foster.
Carl.
Carl. When I made my first dive into deep water, I had dreams about getting the loot from every sunken Spanish galleon that ever sailed the high seas. But I'm grown up now. If this is another treasure hunt, then it's no deal. I've done that bit.
But this isn't just another treasure hunt. This is the gold that went down with the Adamar.
The Adamar's never been located.
It's in 24 fathoms of water.
Yeah, go on.
I trust you, Nick, but I can't afford to take chances. Forget about the location for a minute.
Forgotten. What kind of shape's she in?
I don't know for sure. All I can tell from topside is that she seems to be resting in a gully.
Not good. Any chance you might be wrong?
Oh, possibly. My instruments only gave me the general condition of the wreck.
Well, then you haven't been down.
No, and I can't anymore.
Why not?
Heart.
Oh.
Last case of the bends ruined.
Sorry. But if you haven't been down, how can you be sure it's the Adamar?
I'll tell you. As you probably know, the Adamar was en route to Morocco from here with $3 million in bullion.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the cargo had a secret loading manifest.
1910, wasn't it?
1911.
Huh.
She was last heard from 26 miles southeast of Nantucket Lightship.
Then disappeared.
Right. They've looked for her for 42 years.
Well, then how can you be sure it's the Adamar you've located?
A little over 20 miles southeast of the lightship, I found a wreck. Now, I've checked records till I'm blind, and there's no known wreck of that size reported within 15 miles.
That's kind of flimsy proof.
I got a deal for you.
Go ahead.
Make one dive for me. If it is the Adamar, we continue with our prearranged deal.
If not?
I'll pay you $500 for the dive.
It's a deal. How soon can you get your equipment together?
We're ready to sail right now.
You were pretty sure of yourself, weren't you?
To answer that, I'll deliver a message from your roommate, Fred.
What's that?
He told me to tell you it's a monetary world.
My world is now apart from the world of normal men. My world is composed of me in the depths of the Black Sea. There's no sound but the hiss of the exhaust valve as it sends a long ribbon of bubbles upward. Topside in the normal world, everything's ready. Nothing is left to chance. Everything must be right. The men, the time, the place, and the equipment.
Name it and you've got it. This ship's rigged to tackle anything.
Hey, you weren't kidding when you said you were ready to go.
No, I wasn't. Shall we?
Anchor's away.
Mr. Gordon.
Aye, sir.
Hoist anchor. We're on our way.
Aye, aye, sir.
Let's go to my cabin.
Good idea. I want everything right when I go over the side.
In here.
Thanks.
Your gear stowed away?
All secured.
Fine, fine. Now, here's the layout of the Adamar.
Where's the strong room?
It's right here.
Three decks down.
I thought you'd feel that way.
Well, it's not a problem, really. In a flexible rig at 24 fathoms, I can go right down the stairs from the superstructure to that room, then torch my way in.
If the hull is upright.
Well, you think it isn't?
I can't be sure. Instruments registered smooth surface fore and aft. I think she's on her side in the gully.
There weren't any survivors, were there?
No. On the night she sank, a CQD was picked up, but before recognition was given, it was gone.
Maybe we'll find out how she went down.
Maybe. But remember, we only have a week. Anyway, if she's on her side, here's what we have to do.
Wait a minute. You said you only had a week. Why only a week?
Well, before I located this, I'd already contracted to go to South America for 5 years to do a series of salvage jobs. I don't want to take the chance of somebody else finding the Adamar while I'm gone.
Well, isn't the bullion worth more than the contract?
Well, it is, if it's there. I've seen empty strong rooms before.
So you want to get in, get the loot, if it's there, and get out, is that it?
On the button. Ergo, blasting instead of torching.
Blasting, huh? And what about the rest of the cargo?
No one seems to be able to get a hold of a copy of the manifest.
We may find something interesting when we get the hull opened up.
Yes, we may. Well, here we go.
Yep, here we go. And I didn't even get a sunburn.
Huh? What was that?
Nothing at all. I no longer look upward. The land of my world is about to come to me from beneath. I turn my lamp on again and flash it downward. And there, seeming to rise up from the dark of nothing, is a ship. And I'm no longer alone. Here is something from my other world. Here is something which was touched by men who felt the warmth of sunlight. Here at my feet could be the wreck of the Adamar. On the bottom. Bullseye. I'm on the hull.
How do you feel?
Fine.
Now, Nick, tell me everything you see and what you're doing.
Right. I think I'm pretty close to amidships. You were right. She's on her side.
Now, remember, you've only got an hour.
I'm going to check the boat deck for a nameplate.
Okay, but be careful.
Yeah. Topside.
Here?
You won't have to pay me for the dive.
It's the Adamar?
That's what it says here.
Oh, ho! Start counting your money.
I've spent it already.
Hey, what's the layout, huh?
From where I am, the beam of my lamp just barely reaches to the sides of the gully you mentioned. They're about 20 feet higher than the hull as it lies now.
What kind of bottom do you have?
Can't say for sure. But it doesn't look like sand. Probably mud.
Watch your footing.
Okay. Going over to... What's the matter up there?
Little chop sprung up. We're pitching a bit.
Give me more line.
On its way.
I'm near a side entry port. Can't make out the number.
Let me check. You're on the starboard side, you say. That should make it the one next to the purser's office.
Where's the strong room from where I am?
About 20 feet aft of you.
I'll check. Carl?
Yeah, go ahead, Nick.
I know how the Adamar was sunk.
What's that?
There's a hole amidships big enough to drive a truck through.
Well, can you make out any detail?
The plates are bent inward. Looks like a mine or a torpedo.
Nothing we can do about that now. Are you near the strong room yet?
Heading for it right now. Got to get around this hole.
You want us to lift you over?
No. I'll find foothold on the rivets, the portholes.
Topside.
Carl. Yeah, what is it?
Slipping. No foothold. Take up the slack. Take it up.
Hey, haul away, Gordon. Haul away.
Carl.
Your lines are taut. Can't budge them.
Slack off.
Hey, Nick.
The bottom's mud, all right. I'm in it over my head. Lost my lamp. Can't see a thing.
Look, Nick, we're going to pull three times on your line. Let us know if you feel it.
Go ahead. I said go ahead.
We did. Did you feel it?
No.
We'll pull a little harder.
Slack off. My lines are fouled.
Are you sure?
I think they're fouled on one of the bent plates in the hull.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. I don't think I'm ready to die.
Is bringing you Mr. John Hodiak with Joseph Kearns in Gold of the Adamar, tonight's presentation in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
How long's Autolite been making them automotive electrical systems?
Why, Sheriff, since way back in 1911, when Autolite developed the first two-unit, 6-volt electrical system used as original equipment.
All that time?
Yes, Sheriff, and the Autolite electrical system has a big job to do.
It goes to work when you start your car and works every second the engine does, as well as when you blow your horn, turn on your heater, radio, or lights.
Well, now that Autolite electrical system's pretty good, Harlow.
It's the finest money can buy, Sheriff. And because the electrical system is so important to smooth economical operation of your car, it should be treated to a periodic checkup by your car dealer or authorized Autolite service station. To quickly locate him, look in the classified section of the phone book under Automobile Electrical Service. Or call Western Union and ask for Operator 25. And remember, from bumper to tail light, you're always right with Autolite.
And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage Mr. John Hodiak in Elliot Lewis's production of Gold of the Adamar, a true story well calculated to keep you in suspense.
There isn't much use in struggling. The 200 pounds of my diving rig pull me deeper into mud, which is already over my head. But the dark is the worst. It's the dark that terrifies me. Because it isn't water dark. It's mud dark. I can't find a foothold in this sea of gelatinous muck. Nothing.
Nick.
Suddenly,
can you hear me?
I'm aware of Carl's voice intruding.
Nick.
A welcome intrusion, because
Nick,
it's a voice in the world I so desperately wish I was in.
Nick, can you hear me? Are you okay?
Yeah, Carl. Up to now, I'm okay.
We've taken up all the slack.
Don't try any harder. If my line is fouled on a hull plate, it might tear my air hose.
We know. The important thing is to get you out of the mud.
Important to who? Me? For the $3 million.
Now, easy, Nick.
Sorry.
Are your hands free?
No. My left hand is pressed against my side. My right's across my chest.
Can you move your legs?
Not much. Even if I could, it wouldn't do any good. No solid footing here.
Nick.
Yeah.
Want me to come down and get you?
Want to die?
We gotta do something.
I know. Topside.
All right here, Nick.
I'm going to try something. My right hand's near enough to my inlet valve to turn it full on.
No, you're blown.
Right. Maybe I'll get enough buoyancy to drag myself out of this muck.
If you pop through too fast, you'll surface. Or you'll be dead before we can get to you.
I think I can get into the inlet valve fast enough to cut my air down and let it bleed out slowly so I can stay down. Then I'll get my lines free and you can haul me up. Ready the decompression chamber just in case I miss.
No. It's too risky. Don't do it.
Got a better idea?
No.
Then we'll do it my way. I'm no hero, but it's the only way out of the mud. Ballooning my rig could kill me. If I don't shut off my air in time, I'll shoot up to the surface. Then if I miss braining myself on the hull of the salvage ship, I'll pop through the surface and be dead of the bends before Carl gets to me. But I have to risk it. I don't want to die in the dark of the mud. Slowly, I inch my hand up to my breastplate and twist the handle of the inlet valve. As my rig inflates, I feel the pressure of the mud ease off. A little more. Suddenly, I pull free and shoot up toward the surface. I claw for the air valve and turn it off, but still I rise. Desperately, I bang my exhaust valve wide open with my chin. Too late. I'm too buoyant. Suddenly, I'm brought up short. My fouled lifeline holds firm. As the excess air bleeds through the exhaust valve, I settle back to the Adamar. To another chance at $3 million. I adjust the balance of the valves and look for the spot where my line's fouled. I find it.
Have some more coffee.
Thanks. Oh, man, that air smells good.
Well, I guess that's that.
What do you mean, that's that?
Well, you're not going down there anymore, are you?
Of course I am. I'm a diver, not a tourist.
That was a pretty rough go down there.
Yes, it was. But there's also $3 million down there. I'm not going to let a little mud bother me.
Funny.
What's funny?
You calling it only a little mud.
Yeah. I guess so.
Now that you're going ahead, what's the next step?
Blast.
When?
Tomorrow morning.
How many charges do you think it'll take?
About three.
One thing bothers me.
What's that?
Well, that gully the Atomer's in. Any chance of the sides caving in from the blast?
I thought about that, too. I don't think so, Carl. I'm going to use control charges. Most of the blast effect will channel into the plate.
Mm. Okay. Why don't you turn in now? It's been a rough day.
I think I will. What about you?
In a few minutes.
Okay. Good night.
Night, Nick.
I had nightmares. Nightmares about mud. All night long, I dreamed of sticky, gummy, slimy mud. Until it seemed that the whole world was one gigantic mud ball. Finally, I managed to get a few hours of restful sleep. Dreamless sleep. Welcome sleep. In the morning, I climbed into my rig and went down to set the first blast on the Atomar. The water was clear, and my lamp pierced through to the limit of its beam. I planted the charge against the entry port and went up to the salvage ship to help Carl with a detonation. We made the necessary arrangements and pulled the trigger. The next day was a repetition of the previous day. 6 hours after the second blast, I went down to check the results.
How'd we do?
Knocked off a little more than I expected. The cargo hold is exposed. Looks like there was only one bulkhead between it and the strongroom. I'm going to check it.
Okay, but don't take any chances.
Relax. That gold is as good as a board right now. Topside.
Yeah, go ahead.
I know why the cargo manifest was secret.
What'd you find?
Dynamite.
Why didn't the Atomar blow up when she was hit?
The hole in her hull is aft the munitions hold. Any one of a dozen things could have diverted the shock. Oh, but a main hold full of munitions and dynamite.
It's no surprise to me.
A cargo hold full of munitions isn't a surprise?
Under ordinary conditions, yes. But under the conditions surrounding the voyage of the Atomar, no.
All right, I'll bite. What were the conditions?
Well, first we know that she sailed in 1911, July 2nd.
Yeah, well, what's that?
I'm coming to that. On July 1st. A German warship, the Panther, sailed into the harbor of Agadir port of Morocco.
I think I'm beginning to get the story. This was the incident that almost caused a war between France and Germany.
On the button.
Well, then the reason the Atomar was on its way to Morocco was to deliver the essentials of war, money and munitions.
That's the way I got it figured.
Well, now the secret manifest begins to make sense.
Doesn't it, though?
What do we do now?
That's your job. One more blast.
Are you nuts? The next blast might set off all the munitions.
No, it wouldn't, Nick. That stuff's been underwater for over 40 years. Why, there wouldn't be one chance in a million of that happening.
It happened once before.
When?
1930, the Artelio in the harbor of Quiberona.
Oh, yeah, but the TNT and the hold of that wreck had only been underwater 13 years.
1333 makes no difference.
But there is a difference. That other stuff was only in 10 fathoms. It's 24 fathoms here. There's enough pressure down there to squash every shell, let alone seep into every crack.
All right. What do you want to do?
Blast. Even if it means planting two small charges in two separate trips, it'll still be faster than an underwater torch.
Supposing the whole wreck blows?
Well, then you lose one-fifth of $3 million.
And you?
I go back to South America. Well?
Okay, hate me. I'm greedy. Let's go.
All set?
All set. I set the explosive fore and aft.
Oh, good.
One thing.
Yeah, what?
How much electrical cable you got?
Oh, a couple of thousand feet wide.
Let's use it. We've got the buoy for a marker. Let's ease off as far as we can from the wreck just in case the cargo goes.
Nothing's going to happen.
I said let's move off.
This is my ship and I give the orders. We stay.
Aye, aye, sir.
Gordon.
Aye, sir.
Make ready to blast.
Ready.
Let her go.
There she goes. blew up. The Atomar blew up.
Hang on. Hang on!
We didn't think, but we might as well have. The salvage ship sprung every seam in her hull. Most of the gear was washed overboard as great gobs of mud spewed from the bottom rose into the air and splashed against us. It wasn't hard to imagine what happened on the bottom. The gully that cradled the Atomar collapsed. The sides rolled down on the wreck, burying it under 20 feet of silt. What happened to the $3 million is anybody's guess. Probably salted through all the muck 24 fathoms down. We managed to make it to dry dock for repairs. I never saw Carl again after that. Me? But if you want me, you'll have to write to Chief Petty Officer Larkin, attached to undersea training, New London, Connecticut. I'm eating 3 good meals a day, getting plenty of sunshine, and building up pension time. I think I'm content. As far as I'm concerned, you can have your monetary world.
Suspense. Presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, Mr. John Hodiak.
This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for Autolite, world's largest independent manufacturer of automotive electrical equipment. Autolite is proud to serve the greatest names in the industry. That's why, during the early months of this year, as we did a year ago, the Autolite family will join in saluting the leading car manufacturers who install Autolite products as original equipment. Our Autolite family is a worldwide family and includes some 30,000 men and women in Autolite plants in the United States, Canada, and many foreign countries, and the 18,000 people who have invested a portion of their savings in Autolite, as well as thousands of Autolite distributors and dealers, and the many leading manufacturers who use Autolite products as original equipment. Our Autolite family will salute the Hudson Motor Car Company on the next Autolite Suspense television program. If you live in a television area, check the day and time of Suspense on television so that you'll be sure to see this program.
Next week, a true story with only names and places changed. A classic report on a famous bank robbery and murder in the Old West. It's called The Spencer Brothers. Our star, Mr. Richard Widmark. That's next week on Suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis, with music composed by Lucian Morowick and conducted by Lud Gluskin. Gold of the Atomar was written for Suspense by Ross Murray. In tonight's story, Joseph Kearns was heard as Carl, Clayton Post as Fred, and Charles Calvert as Gordon.
John Hodiak is soon to be seen in Conquest of Cochise, a Columbia picture.
And remember, next week, Mr. Richard Widmark in The Spencer Brothers.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you escape.
Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are adrift in a native canoe, somewhere off the Solomon Islands. Ahead of you lie the unknown terrors of native savagery. And closing in on you is a white man whose gunboat will smash you to the bottom of the sea.
Listen now as Escape brings you John Russell's story, The Price of the Head.
The possessions of Mr. Christopher Pellet were these: a bad name in the islands, a suit of ducks in which he lived and slept, a continuous thirst for liquor, and a set of fine red whiskers. And strangely enough, he had a friend, Karaki. Now, no man can gain friendship except by virtue of some decent quality attaching to him, and Pellet had none. How then explain the loving devotion lavished upon that drunken brute by the gentle native? This was the mystery at Fufuti. But mystery or no, Pellet himself became unendurable to the decent, peaceable folk of the town.
Yo!
Next shot's gonna kill you, Pellet. So help me, I'd put a bullet in your drunken brains. Well, get out.
All right, I'm going. I'm going. In the Silver Isles, there lived a wench whose eyes were blue and nose was... Hey, Mummery! You missed the fun, Mummery. Mummery,
Take your hands off me, Mr. Pellet. You're an offense, sir.
You're an offense, sir. Karaki! Where is that boy?
One day Mr. Howe may be obliged to shoot you.
If he shoot me, that'd be murder. Murder's fine talk for company agent, Mr. Mummery. Where is that boy? Karaki! Come here, Karaki!
Karaki, come quick. He's shot. You all right? No hit Pellet anywhere?
I'm fine, Karaki, fine. Go fetch one bottle of rum. You come along home, huh?
Me go along, Mr. Howe. Pay for trouble. Catch him bottle. Wait here. Me no be much long. You wait.
Fine fellow, that Karaki, eh, Mummery? Only friend I got in this filthy island.
May I suggest, Mr. Pellet, that perhaps if you behave...
Suggest nothing. I got a headache. You tell Karaki I've gone to the beach, huh? In the Silver Isles, there lived a wench whose eyes were blue. All right, Karaki. He'll pay for this mess. But next time he blows off, I'll put a bullet in his leg.
No, Mr. Howe. No shoot. Karaki, all time. Pay good.
Well, Mr. Mummery. Beat it, Karaki.
I'd like a chat with you, Mr. Howe.
Right with you, sir. Boy, Jack, give Karaki a bottle of rum and get this mess cleaned up.
Yes, sir, Mr. Howe.
Come into the office, Mr. Mummery. We're more cozy there. That Pellet ought to be in jail. The man's a mad beast.
He is, and particularly so on your rum, Mr. Howe.
Oh, come now, Mr. Mummery. You can't lay Pellet's sins on my doorstep. Nothing I can do, as long as he pays his bills.
Well, I'm a fair man, Mr. Howe, and I won't order you to stop selling Pellet your rum if there's any other way to handle the matter.
Well, to be honest with you, sir, I do make a small profit on Karaki's pearls, what he pays me with, though nothing enormous, mind you. Still, I'd do without it not to have Pellet about. When I walk down the street, I have a feeling the natives are laughing at me just because I'm a white man, too.
By heavens, it's true. And something must be done at once.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Howe, I'll try talking to him like a gentleman, but I'll be firm with him. Now, if you'll send Moy Jack with a message that I'd like to have him for tea tomorrow...
Tea? If you don't mind my saying so, Mr. Mummery, tea isn't...
All right, then. Tell him there'll be whiskey.
That'll do it, sir. And good luck with him.
Thank you, Mr. Howe. Tagara? Tagara, whiskey for Mr. Pellet, girl.
It's been years since my throat's been wet by good Scotch whiskey, Mummery.
Yes, I'm sure.
And you live well here. Fine house, good liquor, servants.
I work hard, Mr. Pellet, and I stay sober.
You should have been a preacher, Mummery. You missed your line in copra.
No, no, if you please, Mr. Pellet, we are not discussing my career.
No, well, go on, Mummery. As long as I'm drinking your whiskey, I'll listen to your chatter. Girl?
You make it difficult, Mr. Pellet.
I mean to.
Yes, I suppose you do.
I didn't expect you'd invited me here out of friendliness, Mummery.
Well, you could have friends, Mr. Pellet, if you lived decently.
I live the way I want, and I've got a friend.
A savage.
That's odd. Never thought of Karaki as a savage. I suppose he is.
Yes, civilization lies lightly on these people, Mr. Pellet. At heart, Karaki is nothing but a heathen from Bougainville.
Bougainville. Yeah, you know, Karaki likes it there. He's always talking about it. Well, you must probably talk about your home.
But there is a vast difference, I'm sure.
Karaki's quite a serious little man. You just haven't got to know him, that's all.
Well, we'd scarcely find much in common, I fear. Good heavens, Mr. Pellet, surely you haven't sunk so low as to have forgotten everything we stand for out here?
I've no use for any man, except Karaki. He's the only friend I ever have.
But how do you know what is going on in that head of his? How can you tell?
I don't have to. So far he's treated me right, it's enough.
But you have no respect for the position the rest of us here must maintain. You disgrace us in the eyes of every native on this island.
Oh, I'm impressed. Didn't know I was that important a figure, Mummery. Tagara, whatever your name is.
Ah, you are beyond reasoning with, Mr. Pellet.
You can go on trying, Mummery, as long as the whiskey holds out.
Have you no pride, ma'am?
I cleaned out a bar in Sydney once, alone, against 9 sailors.
No, that's not exactly...
I engineered a mutiny aboard an Arab dhow in the Gulf of Oman some years back. I sold a cargo at Bahrain for a pretty figure, Mummery, pretty figure.
Well, that's certainly compounding a crime.
That cargo was illegal in the first place, Mummery. Slaves it was. Little boys and girls from India.
But, Mr. Pellet, I must ask you once and for all...
This bottle's almost finished, Mummery. What do you want?
Will you take a job if I offer you one?
A job? Mummery, I stopped working 9 years ago. I'm against working.
All right. Then I must ask you to leave this island on the next boat.
I like it here, Mummery, and I'm staying here.
Well, I can't make you go, I suppose.
You suppose right.
But I do have certain powers. The company controls the sale of liquor here, Mr. Pellet, and if I order that none be given you...
You'd do that?
I would.
Unless I take a job or leaves, huh?
Exactly.
Well, I'm not working and I'm not leaving, Mummery.
Then you won't be boozing either, Mr. Pellet.
Give me the rest of that bottle, girl. I've earned it.
Good day, Mr. Pellet.
That night, the order went out to serve Pellet no more rum. However, the alcohol he had taken on at the agent's house saw him through until noon the next day. He awoke then, with a terrible thirst, and by evening he was raging. You cannot cut off alcohol from a man who has been continuously drunk for 9 years without results more or less violent. Karaki, with the patience of a saint, bore the brunt of it all. Karaki, the little heathen from Bougainville, a place where some people were smoked and others eaten. It took 2 days of awful torture to break Pellet's spirit. And on the morning of the third, the man was shattered.
Feel much better today, no?
No, Karaki, it gets worse.
Karaki pull him boss from ocean last night. You want him fight big fella shark. Drink blood, you say.
It's out of my head, clean out of my head.
2-3 weeks, you'll be fine once more, my word.
I can't wait 2-3 weeks. I gotta have a drink, Karaki. I die if I don't get a drink.
Wait a few days. All fine.
You don't understand, Karaki. I can't make it. Go tell Mummery I can't make it. Tell him I'll leave on the next ship.
No, can't leave. We plenty much all the time good friend, Karaki and Pellet.
Yeah, I know, but I'm no good dead, Karaki. You go tell him now.
No, can't leave. Wait.
You tell him or I'll tell him, Karaki, but I'll have a bottle if I have to kill to get it.
Not now. Sleep a long couple hour. Then go, maybe.
No, now. No. I'd rather go myself.
No, please.
Karaki, let go of me. Go or I'll smash her. I'll have my rum and no man will stop me.
No, can't leave. Not now.
Mummery!
Mr. Pellet, please. Come in, man, come in.
Mummery, I need a drink.
No, Mr. Pellet, not a drop here or anywhere else in Fufu.
Give me a drink, man. I'll get on your blasted ship.
Oh. Well, then you agree to leave.
Yeah, yeah.
And on the next ship.
Yes, on the next ship.
You can have your rum.
Yeah.
But you'll be on that ship when she sails.
I'll be on it. Give me a drink, man, quick.
So you can get a drink at Mr. Howe's. I'll send a message to him.
Mummery was all I could do to get this far. I need a drink now.
All right, Mr. Pellet, but just one. I will not have you disgracing me in my own house. Yeah? Take it.
Nick. One more.
No.
Give me that bottle. Now, Mummery, if you come to Michael Howe's with me, I'll buy you a drink.
No, thank you, Mr. Pellet. I'd rather not be seen in your company.
Write a note to Howe. Tell him to sell me rum. I'll take it with me.
Do you have to get drunk now, Mr. Pellet?
Now. You back out of this and I'll kill you, Mummery. Now.
All right, Mr. Pellet. But it will be a happy day for all of us when you're aboard that ship.
I'll find me another island, Mummery. Maybe you'll be transferred there one day.
God forbid. I'll write you your note, and I want to see no more of you till the day you leave.
That's good enough for me. You're dull company, Mummery.
At least I'm a gentleman, Mr. Pellet. And I have enough respect for myself not to become a walking insult to me and my race.
The note, Mummery, the note. You can come to Howe's and preach to me. I don't mind it there. Hurry, man. Hurry. Hurry.
You are listening to The Price of the Head, tonight's presentation of Escape. Sometimes it's fun to escape with an adventure story, as you're doing now. At other times, it's fun to relax with music. Tomorrow on CBS Radio, you can enjoy the second in our series of Helsinki's festivals. The program will open with the Sibelius Symphony No. 5 in E-flat major and continue with four more of his most impressive works. Enjoy easy listening on World Music Festivals tomorrow over most of these stations. And now back to Escape and the second act of The Price of the Head.
In the days that followed, Pellet became a sodden lump of flesh preserved in alcohol. He did not smile, nor dance, nor exhibit any of the amiable eccentricities that sometimes recommend the drunken to a certain toleration. He was a brute, and he behaved like a brute. But all the time, waiting for the day the ship would arrive, Karaki remained true and showered more devotion than ever upon his friend. He spent his evenings outside Michael Howe's bar, patiently waiting for Pellet to get drunk enough to take along home. Night after night, Karaki waited, while the white man stood roaring inside.
Boy Jack, bring me another bottle.
Please, Mr. Pellet, close up now. You plenty too much drunk already.
Well, don't tell me when to drink. I'll go get that bottle. Jump.
All right, Mr. Pellet, all right. I get bottle. I fix your bottle.
And hurry it up, you bald clown. Who told you to open it?
Next time I'll open the bottle. Don't you want a broken head, Moy Jack? Where's Howe?
Mr. Howe gone home. Pretty good rum, yes, Mr. Pellet?
Oh, it stinks. So do you. So does everyone on this bloody island.
No like rum?
Here's what I think of your rum. Now come here, Moy Jack. Because I'm going to crack your head. I'm going to crack your head.
Karaki! Karaki! Take him long home now, Karaki.
A few minutes later, the wiry little Karaki had the white man across his shoulder and bore him down the beach to the miserable shelter of pandanus leaves they called home. There he eased Pellet to a mat, bathed him with cool water, and carefully brushed the dirt from his bright red hair and whiskers. Then he sat by with a fan and kept the mosquitoes from the drunkard's bloated face. He sat there all night while Pellet slept. It was midday before Pellet awoke, and groaned his way out of a painful fog of alcohol.
Rum. Rum, Kraki. Rum.
Coconut more better. Here. Drink milk. Feel fine soon.
You'll find sooner if I had some rum, Kraki. Haven't you got a bottle around here, son?
No rum. You drink long too much rum last night. Too much Moy Jack rum.
Huh? What do you mean, too much Moy Jack rum?
Moy Jack put white powder in bottle. Make me sleep.
White powder? So that's it. What a little rat.
Moy Jack him all the time laugh.
Don't tear his throat out.
Be careful. Moy Jack him all the time carry knife. Cut face all up.
Little wax man. I'll murder him. Come on, Kraki.
You watch out for knife. Moy Jack him plenty fast.
I'll kill him.
Watch him fella close. Pellet no get face.
I'll handle him, Kraki. Don't you worry.
Half in anger and half in anticipation of the pleasure of beating a man, Pellet staggered down the beach toward Howe's bar. It was the noon hour of repose, and all Fufuti was asleep. Pellet reached the bar and found Moy Jack dozing peacefully among the bottles. He woke him with a savage kick.
Get up, you dirty scum! Get up so I can bust holes in you.
You hurt me, Mr. Pellet. Let go!
Leave me on the key, will you? Not again, you won't.
Now, I cut you, Mr. Pellet.
Would you now? Well, I'll just fix me a knife, too. Come on, boy. I want to twist this bottle around in your face. There! That'll learn you to fight with a red-headed man. That'll learn you! He's dead. I killed him. I killed him, like I said, Kraki.
Yes. Dead. Plenty trouble now. Police?
Yeah. Come on, let's get out of here. Where we go, Kraki? I gotta hide someplace.
You go long house on beach. Wait there. Me fix some boat. Leave Fufuti quick.
What boat? You got no boat.
Me find a boat. Me hide. Fella friend, Pellet.
All right. I trust you, but hurry, man. Hurry.
Pellet waited in terror in the shack on the beach while Kraki broke into the boat sheds and with an axe smashed the bottoms out of the three craft sheltered there. Then he opened the trade room and quickly gathered together a bundle of supplies, including a rifle and a box of cartridges. Next, he carried everything out onto the beach and loaded it into a stout outrigger canoe that belonged to Mr. Mummery. Finally, he fetched Pellet from the shack, and together they hurriedly launched the canoe in the lagoon. Kraki rigged the big mat sail and then paddled out into the breeze just beyond the harbor entrance.
We made it, Kraki. We're safe.
Yes.
Hey, look, where are we headed for anyway? What island we go, Kraki?
Bougainville.
Bougainville? You crazy? That's 800 miles from here.
All the same, we go along my home.
800 miles?
We go. All fine. Always one bring you along my home.
All right, Kraki. I don't know why you're doing it for me, but I'll see you through.
It was not the beginning of a very pleasant voyage for Mr. Christopher Pellet. The fear of being captured and hanged was great enough, but added to it were the horrors brought on once more by the lack of alcohol. The first night he was too seasick to care, but by morning he was raving.
Rum! Give me rum, you blasted heathen!
No, got him rum.
You bloody fool, why didn't you pack in some rum?
Need water. No need rum. Got plenty water.
Curse you, Kraki. I don't drink water.
Better you drink water.
Well, I won't. Turn back. I'll take hanging to this. Turn back, I tell you.
Soon catch him. One big fella wind. Blow straight to Bougainville.
No. How could you find Bougainville anyway? No. We're going back, I tell you.
Kraki, easily tied the weakened white man hand and foot and continued to sail off into the open sea. Now and then he threw a dipper full of seawater over the white man and occasionally fed him with coconut milk. Karaki was an excellent nurse. He even combed Pellet's red hair and whiskers twice every day. By the time they reached the Santa Cruz region, Pellet's condition had improved and Karaki released him. They were now in an area peppered with tiny islets, and Karaki decided to land on the lee of one in order to replenish their water supply. He had dropped sail and was paddling slowly into the beach when suddenly, from out of nowhere, a cutter carrying two white men appeared behind them.
Ahoy! Heave to!
No catch him, Karaki and Pellet! Go away!
Heave to!
Put that gun down, Karaki. We're in enough trouble now.
Okay, I shoot! Oh.
For some foolish reason, the two white men did not believe a native would dare resist them. And for their mistake, they were both killed. Karaki, however, wasted no time sailing back into the open sea without his precious water. And 29 days later, he was doling out the few remaining drops to Pellet, taking none for himself. His every gesture was one of sacrifice that his white companion might survive. Finally, on the 36th day, they sighted Choiseul, and by noon they came ashore. There they stayed for a week, fattening themselves on the unlimited supply of coconut.
So you think Bougainville is just under the horizon, eh, Karaki?
Yes.
Mighty good thing, too. You know, this is the limit of British authority, my boy. Big fella British master, stop him here. No can go that side, eh?
Yes. No can punish Karaki for anything he do Bougainville side. My word. No catch Pellet. Never.
What makes you so sure of that?
Me savvy.
Well, all right, old chap. You got me this far. I trust you. You know, you're quite a fella, Karaki.
Yes.
Sure don't talk much, though. By heaven, maybe Mummery was right. I'd sure like to know what goes on under that topknot of yours, my boy. I'd like to tell you how grateful I am. Wish I could show you. Listen, Karaki, me one big fella friend long you, sabe? You one big fella friend long me, sabe? Me two big fella friend always. What?
Yes, my word.
Oh, Karaki, you kill me.
And thus did Christopher Pellet express his gratitude to the quiet savage who had with rarest self-sacrifice saved his life again and again. And now that he was thoroughly sober, he could understand it no more than Mummery had back in Fufuti. 2 days later, under a beautiful dawn, they sailed into Bougainville into a bay that was crystal blue and right up onto a dazzling white beach. Pellet was the first ashore, and he ran up to a rocky point to see all the charm of the place for himself. Karaki, in his simple and efficient way, proceeded about his own affairs. He landed what was left of the supplies stolen at Fufuti. A few minutes after, Pellet heard a gentle footstep behind him and turned to find Karaki standing there with the rifle at his hip and the axe in his hand.
Me like.
Me like, too. Great place you've got here, Karaki.
Me like him head.
Huh? What? Oh, me like him you, too, Karaki. We big fella friend, right?
Me like him too much. One fella head belong along you.
What do you mean? I don't understand.
Red hair. Fine red whiskers. Big prize here. Smoke him head. Make him Karaki, big man on island.
You mean you got my head?
Fine head. Very fine head. Cut him off now.
Hey. That was the way of it. That was all the mystery. In Karaki's country, a white man's head, well smoked, was indeed a prize. But that of Mr. Christopher Pellet, with his precious red whiskers, was a thing to be desired above the love of women. And the simple, patient, enduring Karaki had served hard to win it. And did it really matter to Pellet how or why he died, since his own race would have hanged him for murder anyway?
Escape, produced and directed by David Friedkin and Morton Frine, has brought you The Price of the Head, a story by John Russell and adapted for radio by John Meston. Featured in the cast were Mary Jane Croft, Hans Conried, Ben Wright, and Jack Crucian. Also heard were Clayton Post and Herb Butterfield. Your announcer, George Walsh. The special music for Escape is composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. Next week.
There's a fortune in the cabin of an airplane crashed on an island somewhere in the Caribbean. And only you know where it is. By your side, sailing the treacherous channels, a smiling killer with a knife, from whom there is no escape.
So listen next week when Escape brings you E. Jack Newman's story, The Coward. There's music on Melody Ranch tomorrow on CBS Radio when the popular galloping cowboy with the golden voice returns. He's Gene Autry, as singing a saddle man as ever rode the range. Meet Gene Autry at the Old Corral when he returns to Melody Ranch tomorrow on most of these same stations. Stay tuned now for Night Watch, which follows immediately over most of these same stations. Where there's gun smoke, there's Western adventure, Monday nights on the CBS Radio Network.